This episode of TechPod is brought to you by the THWACK community, celebrating SysAdmin Day. From password resets to printer jams, sysadmins keep us all up and running. To learn more about SysAdmin Day, visit thwack.com/sysadminday.
So welcome to the SolarWinds TechPod. I am the host today, and my name is Kevin Sparenberg. You probably know me, but I'm the least important person in the room today. The most important person in the room today is Noel. Noel, people in TechPod probably know who you are, but let's give them a recap, shall we?
Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, my name is Noel Barbie. I run end user services for Americas at SolarWinds. So I'm a service delivery manager. So it's a fancy job title for being a help desk manager for our internal Solarians here.
Well, I mean, it's not a light lift because let's be serious. Almost anyone in IT probably, and I'm being very gracious here, has probably spent some time on a help desk or as a help desk manager or help desk supervisor or a insert title here. Everyone's cut their teeth, I think is the term I normally use when I talk to people on it. And it is the single most thankless job if anything has ever gone wrong. So the fact that you actually work that team, run with that team, and are responsible for that for, you know, the Americas, I mean, clap to you, sir. It is not an easy gig.
It is not an easy gig, but, you know, it's to a testament to our team. I've been doing this for 15 years and they haven't kicked me out yet. Well, 15 years, 15 years of managing help desk and IT support operations. But yeah, at times it is a thankless job, but it's a good job. I've seen so many people start as help desk technicians and become dev ops engineers or security analysts or database administrators or project managers, you name it. And so what I really like to do is serve people and actually serve our team so they could get better and, you know, achieve their goals.
Yeah. And that kind of, well, one of the ones you didn't mention on your short list there is sysadmins.
Yes.
And they are the oft maligned and infrequently celebrated, but that's not the purpose. Today is sysadmin day. So we're celebrating all things sysadmin. And there are many, many good things about being a sysadmin. There are many, many, I'm not going to say bad. There are many very tough days. And you and I were talking a little bit before this where we've had good experiences. We've had not so good experiences. We have had those days that are, you know, absolutely fantastic where everything goes smoothly and you're like, you know what? Queue is empty. Let's all kick off 15 minutes early. We can beat some of the traffic. We can all go home. Anyone want to go see a ball game? I got some tick. You know, there are great days. And then, but they're also, you know, balanced almost almost completely by the really horrific days where things just don't work out well. So I want to ask you, and we're not going to stay on the subject of this, but no, I want to know, what was your worst day? You don't have to tell me the company. You don't have to tell me, but what was your worst day? This could be anywhere in your IT because everyone has these horror days.
Yeah. Young in my career, I manage our SCCM server.
Okay.
Configurator manager server.
I know. That's
And my job was to push out patches, critical patches to our entire environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't go so well because it wasn't our fault. Microsoft released a bad patch.
Yeah.
I had a task to create a script to uninstall that patch, that bad patch.
And yeah, rollback. Yeah.
Do a rollback. But I accidentally deleted the whole patch server database.
That's a bad day.
Yeah, that's a bad day. And so systems were crashing left and right, and we didn't have the infrastructure to fix it.
So you get to rebuild from backup.
And here's the thing. We didn't have a backup because I was in charge of backups too, but I wasn't doing that correctly.
Oh, no.
So I was in over my head a little bit, but I learned really quick about change management process, about not freaking out and just holding your composure and doing things correctly.
Yeah.
So that was probably my worst
thing. And owning it.
And owning it.
That's a big thing. Same thing. Well, not same thing. Also, Microsoft infrastructure. I had a complaint. I'm going 15 years. So if anyone who's listening to this, if you know Microsoft Exchange, you know where I'm going to go with this. I went and we had a specific database store, mailbox database store, that was acting badly, and I was trying to basically dismount it so I could remount it. This is in the 2003 days. So I was trying to dismount it so I could remount it, and it was just sitting there not going anywhere, and this particular server had like four databases on it, and I'm like, whatever, I know what's happening here. We've got a clean backup. I know it was run 15 minutes ago. Worst case scenario is everyone's upset for a while. We restore to a backup. Everyone just shifts around. So I went onto the server and it was, like I said, it was trying to dismount and it didn't work. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to kill the store process. And I'm like, cool, no problem. I kill the store process. Of course, all of the databases go offline instantaneously. And everyone's like, what happened? And I'm like, I was a little too aggressive and I didn't double check because most places I worked before only had like a single database store. So it was just like this one thing that like when you move from small shop to medium-sized business or even enterprise, your thought process has changed. Change management, you brought up, brilliant scenario. It's one of those things you just have to start thinking about when you work with a larger space.
Even with emergency changes, you need to communicate that. And, you know, people like us, we want to make everything right quickly, right? And sometimes that's the downfall of your system administrator, that you want to fix stuff, but sometimes you don't understand the consequences if you do something wrong. And you'll compound the issue.
Oh, yeah. It's the rock and the lake with the ripples. You don't necessarily know where they go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you learn the hard way, right? And so it took me about a good 5-10 years in my career to slow down and make sure you have all your ducks in a row before you make those critical changes.
I've had this discussion recently with someone, and I'm going to take a slight aside here, is that IT people, when we get started, and almost especially if we start on a help desk or a small small shop systems administrators, mm-hmm. we are very much mentally in break fix mode.
Break fix.
This is break. This is broken. Let's fix it right now. And then as you mature, move up your roles, or even as you personally mature in, you know, as an adult or further in your career, you kind of think maybe even these smaller things should be thought as pseudo projects. Even if you're talking about like an emergency change, if I got an emergency change, I need to swap out like all the firmware on all the edge routers across my entire infrastructure. I mean, I could immediately get on the console and start doing that. But is that necessarily the best way, even for an emergency change? Maybe I need to think about this.
Yeah. And that's where service delivery comes into play, right? Yeah. System administrators are operational minded first, break fix, like you said. But we should be thinking how we deliver a better service to our end users, like change management, make sure you're documenting your work, communicating that you're doing the change.
And
right?
when Maybe. You're starting.
And when you're starting, right? And
let's not
do it. Let's not do it during production hours. Get, you know, business agreement. And so it's more than just clicking on the keyboard and clicking on the mouse.
No matter how gratifying those clicks and clacks are. Yeah,
exactly.
There's a human element to it that IT people, when they get started, kind of forget because they're all about the tech. But there's a process. And sometimes I've occasionally said, this is the process of being a good IT citizen.
Yes. That's a great way of putting it. I've never heard it. I might use that.
You can totally steal that.
Yeah, IT citizen.
It's part of you being.
Should make a flag.
We should. Because when you get brought into a part of IT, you're given a specialty, right? Whether that is first line help desk, whether that is 24-hour support, whether that's system administrators, whether it's a NetEng, SecOps, doesn't matter what you do. That job is not your job. And I know that doesn't really make sense. I wish I had a slide.
Other duties as assigned on your job.
Well, the other duties assigned is part of it. Yeah, because there's always going to be that one thing that the boss comes in and says, I saw this thing. You should totally try it out. And you're like, I'm busy now. But no, I mean, when you get down to it, IT's job is like, if I was a network engineer, my job is not to make sure all of the firewalls have the latest firmware and have the right ACLs. My job is to make sure that my users, whether they're customers or internal, can get access to the services they need to do their job to forward the business.
Correct.
So it doesn't matter which kind of, and I'm air quoting this, which IT silo I'm in, the overall job is still the same. My job is to make sure that my end users, whether they're external because they're customers, whether they're internal because they're just working on process documents or working on web pages, that they can do their job. If we fail as IT, that's what breaks down. The business breaks down.
The business breakdown. And one of the beauties of being a system administrator or working in help desk and working in IT, that you see things from end to end, from inception to operation, right? So you'll see everybody who touches the actual product or solutions. And so you don't work in a vacuum. You're working, you're supporting the company. You're supporting the ISR who's trying to sell our products to different end users, but they're using the platform that you're supporting, right? So you're touching not only just the application, but the people behind the application.
Yeah, or the IVR that handles the incoming routing for the phone system. So when people call the support line, they get routed to the right people in the right groups, or the product managers who are busy making video calls and talking to customers about futures, or the CEO, the CTO, all the C-suite, to make sure that they can have their reports so they can do their jobs and make the business steering decisions. And it's not just a SolarWinds thing. This is an anywhere thing.
Anywhere. Yeah. Yeah. Any industry, right?
Yeah. The titles may change.
Yeah.
But your job in IT is to provide services for your organization so your organization can
be successful.
Yep. Yeah. Because you could, I mean, let's go into the Wayback Machine. 35, 40 years ago, thankfully, neither of us were working in IT at that time.
No.
We are not that old.
No.
But 35, 40 years ago, this was still being done, but it was done with paper. And that's when, you know, all the assistants, all the clerks, all of the, those were the people that were the lifeblood. Now, those people have shifted to different roles, and IT has taken off some of the kind of, again, air quote, paperwork and processes. And as long as we continue to do that, the business will continue to be successful. And in theory, businesses can accelerate faster, because if IT infrastructure is there to support it, it'll just keep going.
Yeah. And so, like you said, about 30, 40 years ago, maybe like 20 or 30 years ago, digitizing everything helped with that, right? And yeah, I totally agree. IT is critical in any company because we're doing the technical automation standpoints of. So yeah, Kevin, you're absolutely correct. 20, 30 years ago, you saw a whole shift of digitizing everything. You're talking about, like, you know, administrative assistants used to actually manually track appointments. Now we have, you know, Outlook and Microsoft Teams that does all that. And so, you know, that's a heavy burden on the IT to make sure those services are up and running.
Yeah, especially for those higher level people. But it's really interesting. And I've been in the industry basically since high school. I think a lot of people are in the same boat, and you all start off on a help desk. And if you start off on a help desk, you've always had that bad call. You've always had that one person, no matter what you could do, you weren't going to make them happy. Now, whether it was a policy thing, like, no, I'm sorry, our company can't do that. Or no, IT is not authorized to do that, which has happened. I think everyone's had a call like that.
Correct.
Or the flip side of that, where nothing you could do could make this person happy. You could go to their house, cook them a Thanksgiving dinner.
And it's not good enough.
And it's not going to be good enough. Yeah.
And I could cook very good.
Yeah. Exactly. And I can't. So hopefully you got that call. But there's one of those things that, like, IT help desk specifically, but also sysadmins, NetEngs, all of these people are so far behind the scenes sometimes. The help desk is honestly the face of IT in a lot of organizations. And the sysadmins are the first face beyond that.
Correct.
And the NetEng is kind of like a little beyond that. And it's one of those things that if IT is done right and well, no one knows you're there.
Yeah, nobody knows you're there because they don't need you until they actually need you. But when they do need you, you need to put yourself in your customer's shoes, right? And so that's why I tell
empathy.
You, right? Empathy.
There
empathy
you go.
Is
the
huge.
Word is not used enough in
empathy
this industry.
Empathy and being a servant is huge in our industry, right? Like, what do I need to do to make their job better today, right? And sometimes you do get disgruntled employees or and it comes with the territory, and it's like very, I would say like 0.5%.
Yeah, it's low.
That. It's low. Especially at SolarWinds, I guess I get paid to say 0.0001%.
Yeah.
Like everybody
you got SolarWinds. You got five lines of happiness.
Yeah. Everybody in SolarWinds is amazing, really. And, you know, it's the best company that I've worked for. But when those difficult circumstances do come up, we have to put people first.
Yeah. Because they're not angry with you.
No.
They're angry with the situation. Now, granted, if a server dies on me that was perfectly healthy yesterday, I have every right to be angry at that server because it's not a person. So I'll be angry at that machine that all of a sudden decided my hard drive wasn't feeling up to it today.
And sometimes it's human error too. And you talked about accountability and making emergency changes during the middle of the day. So sometimes we handle difficult customers, but sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot as well too. And when we do, and it will happen, how we learn from it.
Yeah, and how you either change your process.
Correct.
Document it out, you know, and hopefully whatever error you made is not a resume generating event.
No,
it's a term that I've heard Tom LaRock use, and I will steal it to the end of my days because it's absolutely perfect to define when something goes horrifically wrong. But there are scenarios that you need to be agile. You need to be like, okay, that's not working. Let's try this.
Correct.
Honestly, I still to this day attribute good IT technicians very much to mechanics, that this path doesn't seem to be working out. It might be some other related thing. Let me troubleshoot down that path.
Yes. And the really good technicians do that. They're agile. So if something doesn't work, they use fact-based analysis to come up with a different solution, right? But there's a lot of different ways to solve a solution or solve a problem.
Yeah. And one solution may be better than another. And that's the thing you learn by doing. All right. I want to ask you, I'm going to pose a question to you. So one of the things I ask when we have our SolarWinds user groups is one of the things I poll very early on. I ask people in the room, how many of them worked on a help desk?
Okay.
And I ask them just to raise their hands. Yep. And if they don't want to, if they want to abstain, they abstain. And then I ask them to keep that hand up. And I also ask them if they've ever worked in retail. So anyone who hasn't worked in, but then in retail, please raise your hand.
Yep.
And then anyone who's worked in food service, front of house, not back of house, raise your hand. Almost universally, everyone in that room's hand goes up. And I don't mean it because they are like starter jobs or right out of high school jobs. I mean it because those are jobs where you learn to care. Like empathy is first and foremost. It's either take care of your customer, if it's retail or food service, or it's close the ticket because you're taking care of the customer on the help desk. Almost everyone does. And successful IT people, you just meant empathy. They have enough empathy to be invested in the person to get a solution, yet not so much that they get, you know, pigeonholed into, I've got to fix this one person's problems, all the way down to they can't figure out how to Bluetooth connect their car to their phone.
Yeah, you need to provide them a solution quickly. Every job interview that I have conducted, it's like actually my favorite thing to do because I love people and I love meeting people. So I'm weird like that.
But that's fine.
I tell people all the time, I tell my wife and her friends, my family members, I'm nothing but a customer service director that happens to know about IT.
Yeah.
That's all I am. Right. And
I wish more IT people had that mindset.
Well, and the thing is, the people, the Solarians or any employees in this industry, IT, if they have that mindset, they're the ones that go and succeed.
Yeah.
Right. When they put people above technology and you use technology and improve technology to serve people. And like, you know, our CEO, Sudhakar, is very people centric.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And we're using technology to serve our people better.
Yeah.
And so people should go first, technology second, but in order to serve people better, you better learn about the latest technology.
Yeah, it's almost a cycle.
It's a cycle. Like,
yeah, it's people are first, and then we investigate a tech and see if that tech will help the people, not for the sake of tech.
Correct. Not for the sake of tech.
Now, don't get me wrong. Uh-huh. I have run bleeding edge stuff before and had absolute blast learning about it. But when someone came back to me and said, hey, is this something that's actually benefiting you? I'm like, well, yeah, because it's cool. And like, how's it benefiting your job? No, it's not. But it's something interesting. And maybe 6 months from now, it would be something I could help out. Microsoft's Flow is one of those things.
I love Microsoft Flow. Yep.
It's called Flow now. It used to be called something else. Yeah, it was. Like, I was like, this is a neat thing. And they're like, how's it going to help? I was like, I don't know. And then I found a way it could help me. I was like, this is a way it saves me. And that's the kind of thing that I really think IT people, if they have the right mindset, if they're happy, if they're good. If they're good at their jobs and want to improve in their jobs, they're always just interested enough to follow a trend. And I think the evolution from, you know, a frontline technician to a sysadmin, and then from a sysadmin to a virtualization infrastructure, and then possibly over to a storage admin or DBA or whatever, I think it's such a logical progression. I remember going to school and not being like, I want to learn how to do databases, because that wasn't a thing. You had to be exposed to it to be like, this is cool. And I want to know about it.
Okay, yeah. So in my personal experience, I always wanted to be a network engineer.
Cool.
Right? And so my first very tech job was internet tech support. Mm-hmm. For 2.5 years, taking calls for elderly people and how to connect to their dial-up modem. That was my introduction to tech. Mm-hmm. And so I worked for a telecommunications company, and that was my first tech
entry. Yeah.
And I always wanted to be a network engineer. So I got my CCNA, I got my bachelor's in network engineering, mm-hmm. and I could never break into networking. I'm going to be a network engineer. I don't know anything about networking. Mm-hmm. I have book sense, I have my certs, mm-hmm. But I couldn't break in because I didn't have that experience. So a help desk job opened up, and I got referred to apply for that help desk opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing led to another, and I don't use my networking degree anymore. I know about network. I know about switches.
But that also means you can have a logical conversation with the network infrastructure team.
Yes.
And when you see something online about, I don't know, a new Azure endpoint connection or something coming in AWS or something that GCP is making, you can look at that and be like, I know we're kind of where this applies. And if I think it might have value for our company, I can participate in an intelligent discussion about it. I may not know everything. No one's going to.
Yeah, nobody's going to. And like, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I was just like everybody else. I'm going to study this and I'm going to become an expert at networking. And the majority, like with your pool, the majority of people start at help desk.
Yeah.
Right. And they have to learn the basics from end to end, how everything works with each other before they can specialize in something.
Honestly, the one skill I find that, and it's only new help desk technicians, the good ones will pick it up fast, is general troubleshooting. And I think of this in a very generic way. I think of it binary way. It's like, well, is it doing this or this?
Yep.
All right. So then we go down that logical tree. Is it doing this or this? We go down that logical tree. And eventually that will lead you to a most likely solution. The other people that basically just kind of throw darts.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're never going to get it. And if they have a script, sometimes it's worse, sometimes it's better. Depends on your organization. And I've been really, really pleased with SolarWinds. Granted, I came from a high IT background, network engineer, systems engineer, admin, mail. Honestly, I still complain sometimes about the way the mail is set up.
Yeah.
But that's because I have the way I would like it.
Okay, gotcha.
As opposed to what is right for the company. And that's just a me thing. So
Kevin, don't get yourself in trouble on this.
That's why I'm not putting in a ticket, man. I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But I have this, I mean, I same thing early on. I was like, week two, still using everything on-prem. I'm like, can I please change my display name?
Yeah.
Because the middle initial in my name is important to me. There is another
Kevin. Oh, you were that person. That's right.
I am.
Yeah. And actually, we made that change.
You did. Yeah. But I had to find out who to make it through. Like, and I was like, this is easy. And it took longer than it should have. And I'm like, why is this just not done? This is like click, click, done. And I'm like, I know there's not a process for adding my middle initial to a display name, but it's, and that's me. That's me because I came from a place where I could pivot on something of that nature so quickly.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that people, and I don't want to give them the wrong impression about SolarWinds, because we sell software.
Correct.
So they think, possibly erroneously, that we're not like other businesses, that we're not like other organizations. And realistically, the part that actually builds and sells the software is a very small sector of the organization. A lot of us are people like this in the creative spaces, and you in the support, me in the documentation, and some of the writing on the community. It's like, there are very specific things, and every role has a different need.
Correct, correct.
And the industry changes so quickly. And when something, the flow thing, just to go back to that, like when that was announced and I saw what it was capable of, I'm like, this is cool. And I could have ignored it. And then I would have been doing stuff the old way. And I'm tired of talking to people. And I know a lot of people who are listening to this and people I run into are tired of doing things.
I'm still thinking about the old name of Flow.
It's Power Automate?
Power Automate.
Power Automate. Yeah, that sounds right. I know. Okay. We're going to table that for now.
Yeah.
So like we will go through and we will have these discussions with people. We will try to bring information back and we will look at emerging technologies and we will say it's good, but it's not for now. And that was one for me where Microsoft and the SharePoint and even AWS and like their Functionist, their Lambda stuff and things like that. And I'm like, this is cool, but me, Kevin, right now can't see a business case for it. And it's because I don't have the vision. And I want to go back. This is way long ago. I will tell you, I'm sharing. This is a very sad story for Kevin. I will share with you the one technology that got out in front of me. And I was like, it's a fad. It's not going to be that important in 5 years. Virtualization.
Mm.
How wrong I could have been. I'm like, why would people need this? Why don't you just buy server size the way they should be? This is my mental logic. Why would you spend 10 times for a server that you're going to basically get the same performance out of when, and as opposed to running all these racks. And this was Kevin who never actually looked at the power and cooling bill at a data center.
Yeah, absolutely. The physical aspect of it, but just the speed and agility, right? Mm-hmm. For the developers to do what they need to do.
Yeah.
Tear it down, build up, tear it down, build up.
Same thing with cloud. Yeah. I was behind the thing. I'm like, it's a really good idea, but these are areas that I felt outpaced me because I didn't give them enough of a shake because of what my role was at the time. Have you run into something similar where you haven't been able to, like something came in and you were like, oh, I heard about that. And then all of a sudden it's like, this is important.
No, like usually the emerging technology, especially cloud, I'm like, bring it on. Oh, my end users don't have to log into VPN to create a ticket.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, they can log into SolarWinds, service desk anywhere in the world and create a ticket?
I actually manage it on my phone.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I manage my queue.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I don't have to image 100 laptops.
Yeah.
Right? And I could do it all through Azure, still in the box.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm like, bring it on.
Yeah. And if it requires a little extra work, a little learning to get there, that's why you have testing. That's why you have pilot sites. That's why you basically, and everyone does it, you try on a portion of IT itself to make sure it works.
Trial by fire, man.
Sometimes. And that way your end users don't do it. And so when you run into that, now you're talking a lot of emerging techs. I assume you're reading a lot of web pages and blogs and how-to videos and stuff. Like, is that how you learn best, or do you learn in another way?
I'm part of some forums, but it's like YouTube is my friend, right? I probably watch a lot of YouTube, and even they have full classes on YouTube on like different technologies, on just real people, just like a Joe Smith that's running the help desk, or a technical person that wants to put their experience, and they make a video on it, and I listen. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not, but that's kind of my modality of learning. That LinkedIn Learning is also good.
LinkedIn Learning is amazing.
Yeah, LinkedIn Learning is
amazing. I have just started scratching the surface, but I really liked that. But I still am in the old school that if I need to learn something that's really in depth and really nuanced, I still need a book. And I don't mean a PDF. I mean, I need an actual paper, 3 pounds, wham, on your desk to flip through so I can put post-it notes, so I can highlight things, so I can make little notes. That's still the way I learn, but that's how I learn concepts.
Concepts.
Exactly. Yeah. But I learn by doing, breaking, fixing, succeeding.
Yeah. So I try to learn from other people's mistakes.
Yes.
And so I'm more of a classroom and just, listen to other people and collaborating on ideas and learning technologies along the way.
Yeah, of course.
But not myself. Right. And that's how I learn best. And I'm not a book guy. I'm a video guy. I'm more of like audio and visual person. And we learn differently.
Yeah.
But we're getting to the same. The thing is that we keep learning.
Yeah.
We're continuing learning. And if you're not learning, you're dead. And if you're not learning in this industry, you're going to fail.
So there's a frequent joke I see online that when IT people do a great thing, management walks through and says, pizza party. You do not celebrate that right way. When there's real successes, you actually...
No, we take the team out. We actually, what I like to do is just public acknowledge the team.
Yeah. Right? Now, you're not talking just to IT. You're talking tell the whole org.
To the whole org.
Yeah.
Because they have to know.
That's a big win. W. Yeah.
They don't know the work and sometimes the hours behind the scenes our team put in to make a project successful. And the... our team is not looking for the pizza parties and the parties, which is good. Give me free pizza.
Free food's fine. I ain't going to say no.
Pizza, I'll take it. Or, we'll go to a movie. But you're looking for acknowledgement that I'm doing a good job and feel value as a company.
And you call the people out individually. Yeah. You don't say, hey, this is admin team. You say, Joe and correct. Eric and Brian and Carmen and these, all correct. Of these people did the hard work.
Yes.
And they're the ones who, I'm just here reporting it.
Correct. And, our global director, Brody Taylor, and my colleague, Jonathan Keneally, out of Cork, we set and Vish Goh of Manila, I don't want to miss him. We set a good culture of doing that. Yeah. I'm a brag on my team. And I'm going to take, I'm a brag on my team, but when I'm going to protect my team when things go wrong, because it's all on me. Right. And so that creates synergy with the team. It creates trust and loyalty. And they work that much harder to serve our employees.
Okay.
Or end users.
Yeah. Anybody, really.
Anybody. Yeah.
So how long have you actually been with SolarWinds?
3 years and a few months. It feels like 10 years.
Yeah, it does. We're talking IT time. So that's at least one career of, working for anyone
else. It feels like a full decade.
Yeah. So are there more hectic times of the year at a software company? Versus are there, because obviously we have release schedules we hit up, are they more busy there? Are they more busy around the holidays? Are they more busy in the middle of the summer? When are your hectic times? Or are you so streamlined that everything has the same amount of crazy throughout the whole year?
Same amount of crazy throughout the whole year because we're an agile company.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's not, the E team wants to hit off global kickoff meetings and set that up for the first time.
Yeah.
And then we have RTO, return to office prep.
Yep.
Oh, we want to deploy YubiKeys to half the company.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We need to upgrade everybody to Windows 11. There's something always that's going on. But I say this because like, you would think that during the summertime, people are off and less tickets do come in. But remember, we're a project-based company as well, too. There's a lot of different initiatives that we have to knock out. It seems like something new every month that we have to do. So to answer your question, no, we're always busy, but we do it. I mean, but that's a good thing. That's why we felt like we've been here for 10 years because it's not boring and we're always learning something. Like, you know, we're moving everything to the cloud right now. Mm-hmm. We have like 20 secure by design projects going on. So there's always something. It's like what bubbles at the top.
Yeah. What's today's priority?
What's today's priority?
And it's not like today's priority is something is on fire. It's like, I can devote a little extra time today to this thing. And I love the summer analogy you give because everyone's like, oh, everyone takes long vacations in the summer. It's like when your end users take long vacations, that means IT won't get as many cases. They won't get many incidents, which means I can devote time to my projects, especially if those also interrupt any type of work thing. You know, the number of changes I did over the summer is amazing because people are not going to be impacted. So I think it's having that mindset halfway between break fix and halfway between project management and being able to go back and forth and
that's,
have the discussions.
Yeah. And that's an art too.
Yeah.
Communication is key. All right. What's priority? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to make sure that the wheels on the bus are still going round and round. Mm-hmm. But how are we improving the air conditioning on the bus? Does the windows go down? How we're optimizing and making the bus better as it's going down the street to its destination.
Right? Exactly.
So we want to make sure that everything's working, but also improve at the same time, which is the art. I mean, you go back and forth.
Yeah. And that's the dial we have with ourselves. Sometimes we're going, you know, project, sometimes we're going break fix. And, you know, sometimes things just go sideways. Sometimes, I don't know, a floor switch just melts down, the back plane fries on it, and it's all hands on deck to swap in a new one and configure it. But it's being able to prioritize that stuff and then recognizing the people that have sacrificed their time, their energy, stayed late, got up early to do that. Emergency changes are one of my least favorite things to do, but some of the most critical ones. And thankfully, where I came from, they were applauded because they knew this was absolutely necessary. You guys did fantastic work. And it went out to in our organization because it wasn't really IT centric. It went only within IT, but it still like went to like 100 and some odd people. And you were recognized for your diligence.
You're recognized for your diligence, and it doesn't stop there. After emergency changes, the same person is continuing put in process to improve, so you don't have to do that emergency change the next time, right? And so, we should really honor our system admins for doing all that work. And I feel the average person doesn't understand how many hours and how much it takes to make the company successful.
Yeah. I think they appreciate it with silence, which sounds horrible, but because they're not yelling at you, that means everything is working. So for the average person, if they don't have to contact you, you've been successful. And they are essentially thanking you by not telling you what's broken.
And that's fine. And we know that going in.
And that's why it's important for IT professionals to thank other IT professionals.
Correct. And that's why we're doing this. Because we love all.
Hey, last night or two nights ago, I had a problem connecting to the Wi-Fi where I'm staying, and I called their help desk. And I said, they got me connected. I said, cool. They like MAC address, IP, and I had everything ready. And they're like, all right, you'll be done until blah, blah, blah. I was like, great. And I said, can I talk to your manager? And they were like, what? Yeah. And you know where I'm going with this. Yeah. They were like, okay. And I got the manager on the phone. I was like, I just want to let you know that Brian was fantastic.
Correct.
You probably don't get enough calls from people that say your help desk, your support, sysadmins, your net engines, your anyone is doing a good job because everyone calls you when they're complaining. I want you to know they did a fantastic job and I appreciate your help and we can close the case now.
Yeah. And like, I love it when I get those kudos from our customers. And what I do when we get those emails or Teams messages or just, you know, casual conversations, I make sure to include the person who gave good experience or good customer service. I include my boss, my boss's boss, and my boss's boss's boss.
And if it's someone from a different department that you heard good things about, you wrap in everyone that's involved.
Wrap in everyone, and just
because
it's
not even all the big wins.
No, it's
because those projects that go great. Yeah, everyone's really happy when guess what? Our migration of mail moved from this system to this system, or hey, we transitioned from this internet to that internet. Those are big things and they're wide sweeping, but just having someone who had a positive experience, especially when they were probably having a bad day, I don't know if there's anything more gratifying as someone in the IT space.
Yeah, there's nothing. And we actually create a division in SolarWinds for customer experience. And Matt Hahn is running that because we are so laser focused, not only on the technology, the system administration portion, but the experience, the customer experience, which goes hand in hand.
Yeah, there is a definite link between actual like happiness and the kind of CX, the customer experience, UI and UX and all. At the end of it, it's a human interaction.
Correct.
With a piece of technology and you're just proctoring.
I love this conversation. This is fun.
This is how we do it. Now I feel like we've covered nearly everything though. All right. You got any questions for me?
But what trends are you seeing? You talk to so many different IT professionals, system engineers, developers, IT executives. You talk to like a vast amount of different people. What trends are you seeing that's going to come to fruition in the next 12 to 24 months that we're going to focus on?
Industry-wide, I mean, we have our IT trends report, which basically we poll everyone out there. But anecdotally, there's been fear that I've been talking with people who are, because they're so used to having hands-on on gear, they're afraid of basically giving cloud providers, you know, that, I don't even say access, but that role. They're literally letting Azure and AWS and GCP and IBM and everyone else, they're letting all of those cloud people essentially be their hands in a data center. And even if they're a co-load, you could still technically go to that room, get inside the cage and, you know, do stuff. There's an inherent fear when a portion of your responsibility is taken from you and given to someone else. And I think it's more of a visceral thing than it is a technology thing. Because, I mean, I'll be serious. The last 2-3 years I worked like at my last company, the number of times I actually went to a server and plugged in a crash cart was incredibly rare.
Yep.
It was all RDP or SSH. You got to it in a different way.
Correct.
Because it was in a colo. If you had to go there, it was because you were putting in a new server, pulling a swap or swapping cables, like things you had to do in that space. And I think the one thing that is the most interesting to me is probably a combination of two things. Number one is containerization in the cloud is incredibly interesting. Now, containerization on-prem, certainly very interesting, but doesn't have the scale or the breadth that you can actually do in cloud if it's built right. If it's built wrong, it can go catastrophically wrong. I'm not going to say I've seen it, but I've read articles that it can go very bad very quickly. And it just has to do with scaling and doing your testing right. And the other one is, I kind of alluded to it earlier, I think Amazon still calls it Lambda, although that may have been a code name, the serverless kind of functions that you basically just put out there. And the way that you can basically build systems, and I'm using systems in a very generic phrasing here, when you can build systems that don't necessarily have servers, but you connect them like in a visual way.
Correct.
The number of people that I know that work very much still in like, you know, config management lines or work in the registry or work in config files or work in file system or work out of a database that stores things. Those people that when you tell them you're not going to have that anymore, it's just basically going to be this completely ephemeral thing that you can never actually really download because it can never run in your infrastructure because it's only made to exist there. There's a fear there, but there's also such a power to that. As long as you work with that, and I think the number of people that will take advantage of serverless stuff, especially doing, you know, some of the AI things and the ML, more the ML stuff, I think, than the AI, because just doing mass statistical analysis is mind-numbing to me, at least. But being able to take advantage of those, you know, the big data providers that can actually crunch through those numbers, I think it's something that we will warm to, but we will have to have someone go out and show us this is how you can do it right with an actual business and more the business, a cool case. You give us something cool and like, and I don't mean like the Netflix ones because Netflix has all this great stuff. You know, there are ML that goes through and determines this is probably what you'll like. This one doesn't like, people like this. Like, that's great. That's statistics, but everyone can do that. But I'm talking about something that actually fits in a weird business space. And I always go back to automobiles. It's like, hey, I need a service order. This is my VIN number. Go out to the service thing, pull in the service history from these three people, then check me whether I have any recalls. And that's just a really horrific, simplified scenario. But being able to take that information, but still maintain a level of privacy with it is like somehow uniquely identified. The amount of information that is capable just from the amount of silicon we have crunching numbers with ones and zeros, the next 10 years is going to be crazy. And the more we put into the cloud, and, you know, it's not going to be a Skynet thing, but, you know, there is a, like I said, there's an inherent fear because you're literally taking away the things I can't touch. Microsoft's not going to let me roll up on Redmond and go ahead and touch the things because that's not what I pay them for. I pay them to manage it. So
one more question.
Yeah.
The future of technology talent. Like, are we struggling finding, industry-wide,
yeah.
Finding qualified people to do advanced technology system admins developing, or do we need to build from the ground up? I mean, what's your thought process of the future in tech from an employee standpoint? Do we have enough talent?
I mean, I'll always take more talent.
Yeah.
But realistically, I think we're in a weird space because, again, rewind 10, 15 years. And if you were going to do true systems admin, you learned one of two things. You learned Windows infrastructure. You learned Linux infrastructure. You know, this is the days after NetWare was no longer really acceptable. Correct. And, you know, so you basically had a choice of two. So if you were looking for someone in the sysadmin space, they were kind of in one of those two buckets. Now, we can't even talk about those buckets because you have the cloud thing. You have AWS. You have Azure. You have IBM. You have
GCP.
You have Azure AD. You have all the GCP. You have the authentication, the Kerberos. That's anywhere you want it. You can have the realm stretching across.
That's
so
now.
That is the today thing. So I don't think we're at a lack of talent. I think that maybe it's partially on us about defining what a job need is. And I mean this in a very specific, like I'm posting, I need someone to do this thing. I think people have so much stuff that we now cram in other duties as assigned.
Correct.
That even if they hit the top three, most of the time they at least deserve a talk because even though they don't hit all of them, ask them about ask what they wasn't in that job posting. Because people will have talents that will probably surprise you. They're going to have passion projects they're going to work on the side or an elective that kind of got them a little interested.
And do they have the space to pursue those passions? And do they have the space to actually be trained on just different, now fast moving technologies? And sometimes we struggle with that. We push so hard that sometimes we need to step back and, you know, have our people go to training, right? Even though we have these training dollars. Because technology is moving so fast.
Hey, it is a bounce. The number of times I've gone to people, and thankfully no one here, but I've gone to people and I say, why aren't we doing this? And they say, because it hasn't been done that way before and that's too new.
Mm.
That is not a good mindset if you want to be agile.
No.
If you want to continue in IT. And that's what we need to really wrap everything back around. This is all about making the best of the situation, given your resources, given your processes, and making sure you recognize the sysadmins. Because they're doing all the work when you don't know they're doing all that work. So we bring it all back to the sysadmins because we are here celebrating sysadmin day. What would you look for? Like, what kind of things make a good sysadmin?
Somebody that's passionate about learning, right? You have to be on top of the new technology, but probably more importantly, somebody that's passionate about helping people. Right? Somebody that wants to improve our employee base and help them become successful through technology. And that takes a lot of empathy that we talked about, but a strong work ethic because you have to learn along the way while you're fixing somebody's issue.
Yeah.
And so system admins is not just, you know, your local geek squad. That like, no, we're geeking out right now and we love technology, but it's more to it, right? Somebody that's passionate about learning, somebody that's passionate about improving and adding value to the organization.
I cannot agree more strenuously with that. I think you're right. Passion first for the tech, passion for helping people, and a desire to learn.
Yeah,
you take those three boxes and you can be successful pretty much anywhere you want to be, but especially in IT.
Especially in IT. And man, there's a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for good people all the time.
Everyone.
Everyone is, right? And it's okay if you want to be a network engineer but don't have the experience, start at the help desk.
Yeah, please do. Because you may also find that it wasn't always cracked up to be.
Correct.
Maybe you're really passionate about this new cloudy thing.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I should be a DevOps guy. Or I like Azure more than Cisco devices,
yeah,
right? So, or, you know, I'm really into audiovisual technology. Yeah. So I want to be on the video team. So at Help Desk is one of the great jobs that you can see everything work from end to end.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't, you know, yeah, I couldn't advise that more or suggest that more if somebody's wanting to start their IT career.
It is one of the best first stepping stones if you just want to try that maybe this IT thing is for you.
Correct.
And I can't agree more with that. All right. So that's going to wrap us for that episode. Again, I'm Kevin Sparenberg.
My name is Noel Barbie.
Thank you very much. And we will see you next time.
Take care, guys.